Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a January 23rd edition of the MSP Initiative MSP Talk. Let's go through some general housekeeping like we do at the beginning of every one of these sessions, and then we'll get on to the good stuff. MSPinitiative.com. This session is being recorded. You'll find it under the Sessions tab. We post it to a bunch of podcatchers. We also post it to YouTube, but all of the sessions are listed here, regardless of whatever format you prefer. You'll also see next to the Sessions tab a tab for MSP Community Minds. We have two of these events coming up this year, April 17th and 18th in Nashville, and July 24th and 25th in Denver. What is MSP Community Minds? Simply, we wanted to an event with a slightly different agenda and blueprint, right? Think panels from people that are in the MSP space, like you, actual people that have been in the trench doing work. All over the place, right? So we wanted to get real world feedback on things. So there's MSP panels, and then there'll also be workshops where we, either have MSPs doing workshops or experts from around the industry doing workshops. And these are usually a couple hours. It's not a 45-minute PowerPoint presentation. We want you to walk away with something tangible. So it is definitely a very education-focused event. It's not a trade show floor. With a bunch of things being spammed at you. It's 100% free for you to register as an MSP. You do have to get there. That's the cost part, but there's no $3.99, $5.99, $9.99 fee for you to attend. It is completely free as an MSP to join the event. That is MSP Community Minds. And then, as you know, we love the concept of block parties, community parties, completely a labor of love and designed specifically for you to have a great time. So here are the ones that we have penciled in for this year. We have Europe, APAC, US. I think we have six of these planned, and they're a great time. We hope you love these because that they're completely done for you. So if you don't like them, we're doing something wrong. There's the offers or hookups page. Again, if you find anything on there that you like, feel free to take advantage. And thanks to our very own Jen, who's behind the scenes running all these podcasts, we have published somewhere between 250 and 300 industry events for 2024. We'll keep an eye out for more of these, right? These are the ones we knew about going into January for the rest of the year. But that'll give you an idea of the fact that if you really wanted to not ever be home and out on the road, and you could, I don't suggest you do, but you could. So there you go. That is MSPinitiative.com. I know initiative is sometimes hard to spell, so feel free to put it into Google. It will spell correct to you, and you will know how to get to MSPinitiative.com. Boom, done. So that is the housekeeping. Here we are. We bring back a former guest onto the show today. Now in a new year, Melissa Hockenberry. How are you doing today, Melissa?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Did you did you fall into 2024? Did I always get that, when I used to do a lot of date writing, everybody always got like, oh, that's right, I gotta cross out 23, put out 24. It always happens for like a good month.
Well, it's funny. I did a video on that back in like October, and I said to people, "Are you already mistakenly writing 2024?" Because when I worked for big business, I would start writing the date, because I do so much planning, so much budgeting, everything that I everything would have 2024 on it. And then by the time the new year came, what I mistakenly did was write the next year. I'd be like,
Yeah.
"Oh, we just changed years, so now I'm at 25." So I usually do pretty well with catching up on the on where I'm supposed to be and what year I'm in, just because of the planning. And so yeah, I think it's a good sign when you actually jump a year ahead. So never think that's bad, but yeah.
Well, I'll let you know when the DeLorean's available. You can go back and forward however you want.
Love it. Would love it.
So for everyone that didn't catch the first one of these when you're on last time, it'd be great to give you, a little bit of background on yourself and like what your expertise is, and then we'll go into some ideas.
Sure, certainly. So most people would know about a little company called Autotask. And I started with Autotask back in 2004. I was the first dedicated product support specialist. And I was there when the company was hiring a group of people from groups. I guess we were the 9 to 16 hired group. We were the first like angel funding, or actually I think it was the first venture capital funded group. So that was exciting. I was the first person to get a promotion, the first person to work from home. Just got a lot of firsts at Autotask and grew up with them over 18 and a half years. So that was, so obviously worked there when the merge with Datto happened, when the acquisition with Kaseya happened, and then broke out on my own in the end of 22. It seems so crazy that now we're in 24. It seems like so long ago, but and announced my business at the beginning of 23, focused on MSPs, helping them retain revenue and customers through improved customer experience. So even since we talked last, I've probably gotten better at narrowing that sentence down. As I like to say, I've decluttered my words. So that's my focus. My passion is about taking care of both your internal customers and your external customers. So coaching your employees to be better, as well as helping all of your team understand the impact of changes on the external customer experience, and helping your team understand the external customer experience as well. So it's really, it's very people focused, people and education focused.
Yeah, it's amazing that as much as we are in a technology industry, still is really people focused, let's be honest. People, process, you know, all that whole, you know, all the little, you know, good sayings there. You know, at the end of the day, the technology business, you know, is a little bit, you know, sometimes stuff changes, some stuff doesn't, right? Like, everybody's all about, like, I guess the next evolution of, you know, workflow, like, you know, AI or whatever you want to call it, right? It seems to be real cushy right now. It's a new marketing fad. I don't know what that actually means, by the way. I couldn't tell you, but, you know, some people seem to think of what it can do. I'm a practical guy, right? It's like, well, what can I get it? What can I do today? You know, like, right. I don't have time to, like, when it comes to me, then I'll talk about it. Until then, like, keep dreaming, and then, like, let me know when you come up with something.
I think it takes everyone. We need the dreamers that are doing that, right? Yeah. But I'm a bit of a realist too. I'm by no means an early adopter. I will wait for it to be vetted out on things, and I like to plan. So I'll keep it on the radar, but I won't put a lot of energy into those first things. Yeah.
There's a lot of worry that, like, this could replace people, right, in the chairs. Maybe, you know, give it some time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, however long it takes. But, you know, I would think, just like when ChatGPT really kind of exploded like a year and a half, 2 years ago, it was like, well, hey, it can do all this writing for you, and you can like query it, and it'll build stuff for you and build content. I don't know if it's good content, but it's something, right? And it's like, maybe it'll help you, but I don't think I would just feed the machine. I actually saw a news article that popped up at the end of the year last year. Like, a lawyer had ChatGPT write a brief. They submitted it to the court, and there was like, court's like, what is this, right? Like, you're citing fake cases. Like, this isn't real. And they got like, you know, a little bit, yep, slapped on the wrist. But that's a little worrisome.
I know. I think it sort of scares me. I just with education wise, I'm like, I hope they always keep the bar for lawyers, the medical exams, right? Like, is it like somebody ChatGPTs their way through college? I don't want them to be my doctor. Like, that's just concerning to me. So I hope some of those standards remain. All of them should have standards, but those things are kind of, you know, medical sort of life or death situation there. So.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100%. I'll take the person that actually did the work. Although, can you look that up? I don't think so. So anyway, but one of the things that we, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm sure you consult with a lot of people, and that's like your thing. 18 years at a SaaS company that supports MSP land. I'm sure you learned a lot of things. Still run into, and again, I think size and maturity changes how a lot of these things that we're going to talk about really go. But I still run into a lot of companies who, like, don't have a budget, don't have a formal plan. They kind of just figure it out as they go. Don't, you know, like, they're bringing people in and out of the company as, like, you know, the fire burns. It's a little bit of why the industry, you know, like, you know, kind of goes up and down, right? I mean, let me give you one last thought before we go into this. I was talking to somebody last week, and I said, I believe that there will be more net new MSPs created this year than consolidated or go out of business, right? And the person I was talking to was like, how do you figure? And I'm like, there's a lot of people still getting cut from, you know, like if you look at all of the layoffs that happened through 2023 and still into 2024, a lot of the big companies shuffled a lot, you know, double digit percentages out the door. There's people like still looking for work. So like I then take the concept of, well, hey, what am I good at? Well, if you're a technology person, and technology is a big word, right? It's multiple areas. You can kind of take the gig economy theory and say, well, I can do 2, 3, 4 things to commingle my income, right? Like, and I think today it's more easier than ever to try and offer some sort of consulting, IT services, managed services. So like for me, you know, that means a lot of new companies popping up, a lot of new people that kind of, you know, start something new just because, you know, they can't find a gig anywhere else. Trust me when I tell you, I've argued this point a billion times. This idea that everybody that could need an MSP already has an MSP is absolutely baloney. I don't believe that for one second. There's plenty of business out there that people who need an MSP that do not have one. But the problem is, back to the original kind of, you know, idea around this thought is, these people go into this head first saying, well, let's figure out where I can, you know, rub two sticks together and make some money. There's not really a plan. There's not really a budget. There's not really an idea on growth, right? To kind of just say, throw it against the wall, right? Let's see what happens.
100%. I think that's what I've been astonished with, George, as I've started to dig in to more stories and more companies and has been, in my mind, miraculously, how some companies have just grown to, and I'm not talking like 3 or 4 people, I'm talking like 20 or 30 or 40 people, right? Which is, you're not going to, I don't think you're going to make that huge next leap without some guy. But I actually, in a lot of ways, commend people that I'm like, good for you. Like, you've supported 20 to 40 people's dinner tables for decade or more, right? Just on, I guess, probably gut. You know, somewhat on what the market needed, somewhat on just a scrappiness to make sure there was enough revenue to, you know, but there comes a point where you need to plan and you need to have goals, and they might be, I think so many times there's this, having come from like, so I came into technology, you know, from actually retail and nonprofit management. So that was my background, was majority worked for JCPenney for 6 years. So it was very customer focused. And that's where I got my onset. Then I did a short stint in a technology company. And then I moved, which way back when you didn't do remote work, right? That meant I had to leave. And then I did nonprofit. And coming into technology, I was getting my MBA, and I don't know if I said this last time, and people were like, well, even though you're getting your MBA, we'll hire you, right? Like, even though you're one of those people. And I think there's this condescension on traditional business approach. And there's something to be said for that, right? There is something to be said for some goals, some structure, and some planning, and looking beyond the next year, like not just thinking in this year cycle. I was just thinking today that, you know, I think once you get into January, you get into February, you get into like Q1, people are like, well, it's too late to do 24 goals. And I'm like, you know, most reporting things will allow you to customize the date range. So if you note when you started this thing, you can still do a 7-month, 10-month, 9-month, how well did we do in that time frame? And better yet, in the same, you know, environment, you could take the first 2 months that you didn't do anything like that. And there's your baseline. Compare it to the rest of the year. I do get frustrated with people who like write off planning or you know, goals or anything after, you know, half of Q1 is done, or even month of January or whatever. It's not too late. I like to think of it more as my daughter's getting ready for college admissions. So like the rolling college admissions, as opposed to like the healthcare enrollment. This is a rolling admission to getting yourself some strategy and some goal. And it can happen at any point in time.
Well, I think that either people just look at the bank statement at the end of the month, or they wait till the tax guy comes around and says, hey, it's that time. And then all of a sudden they're like, do we actually make money? Like, are we doing something that's actually working, or are we just on the treadmill and we're not moving anywhere? And I know that that's true for a lot of people. Let's be honest. I mean, at some point, you know, like you want to create a buffer. You want to make sure that, like, you know, you have some cushion there, right? In case something goes wildly off. But at the end of the day, like, paying 20, 30, 40 people, 5 people, 10 people. I mean, there is a little bit of a responsibility there, right? I mean, these people are relying on you, right? Because, you know, they're, you know, you're putting food on the table, like you said earlier, you know, but in the same token, like, is the business there? Is it profitable? You know, a lot of MSPs get caught up in a lot of areas where they're actually losing money and they just don't realize it until like an epiphany event happens. And a lot of that could be around things that you are doing back in your Autotest days. Are we properly billing and accounting for time? Are we billing properly for all of the third-party things that we're reselling? You know, like if it's a low margin thing and you're not capturing it in time, you're literally just giving your money away, which doesn't make sense.
No, not at all. And that was one of the big training things I would talk about when we would talk about contracts. I could go forever on the, not just the contracts section of Autotask, which is has gotten so much better. It was really quite challenging, you know, 20 plus years ago. I talked more so about their profitability. And I said, you know, just knowing you're a profitable company, little pat on the back. Yay. Some people don't even know that. So, right? Yes. Small golf clap. You know, knowing your most profitable arrangement contract, that's a big move. That's good. That's great. You know what you should be selling more of. And then going to the level of, I know my most profitable service, right? That's the granularity that you need to get to. Because I'm always amazed at the people that will throw out like a profit target, but can't tell me any of those smaller numbers. They just want to keep being profitable. And I'm like, what if you are selling a negative margin service? Like, you have yet to realize you're losing money. You're trying to reach this like 3%, 5%, 10% profit growth. But what you're selling the most of is like at a negative 2%. That I'm like, until you can get down to at least a contract level understanding, like an arrangement level that, hey, this customer's profitable, I don't think you can be smart about putting out profit goals. That's why I'm, you know, a big fan of understanding those things. And I know it's tedious work, but you have an accountant that can help you do that tedious work and ask the right questions, or even a really good bookkeeper who might be, you know, skilled in asking the right questions. But it's worthy work to do when you're talking about the goal planning.
I think when you're a one person show, different, a little bit different, right? Because you can kind of, you know, do this a little bit and get close. Yeah. You start getting 3, 5, 10 plus people, I think you could get in a lot of trouble doing this. And quite frankly, by the time you figure out that you're in trouble, you know, the bank account's negative, right? Like, that's the worst time to figure it out.
Right.
I also think, you know, and again, just putting on my, you know, former MSP, you know, PTSD hat on a little bit. I mean, you know, all the complaints around your customers calling you at the absolutely inopportune time, nights, weekends, holidays, or expecting you to drop everything and put the fire out. You know, like, you think you're going above and beyond to crush it for them, but when it comes with a dollar amount associated with it, all of a sudden their behavior changes and they're not as thankful, by the way, in the future, right? It's like they forget that you actually did these things. They just expect it, right? So I think, you know, the power of defining what the boundaries are of what you're offering and like saying no if you're not, you know, like on the same page, it's kind of a requirement. I know that that's hard when you're, you know, wanting to make everyone happy and keep everybody paying you. But at the end of the day, if you don't understand your math, you're going to be saying yes to a lot of things that don't make sense. And then 100%. You're going to be very unhappy with the results because you made concessions with your own time that you're not actually getting anything back for.
Yes. And when you're new to it, it is really, I mean, having just come through this, I'm still very, very new to being not a W-2 employee, right? But I can tell you, I understand the scary, right? It is scary to be like, no, you don't fit. But it's like, who would match up themselves with a, you know, prospective date that you're like, oh, this is just ugly. We have nothing in common. I mean, who would do that, right? I'm going to go invest in time with this person who I don't like on the surface at all. It makes no sense. We would never invest our time that way. But when there's money associated with it, like, oh, pay me to date that person. Okay, I guess maybe then I would. And that's the challenge, is that you've got to realize that it's more than just a time suck. It's an energy suck. It's potentially building a bitterness that's going to hurt your reputation in the market. Like, there's so many bigger pictures to that side of things that I agree with you. Yeah, it is scary to say no to those people, but if you've never defined who you are, it's also hard to say no. It's easy to just keep saying yes if you don't really know this is what we do, and this is what we do well, and this is what we do profitably. So for those, you know, not to get down on the 3 to 5 person shop who's possibly still there, I totally get that. It's just a question that from the beginning, we should always be asking, what am I best at? What is profitable for me? Even if you can't get there, you should start to be thinking like that, that I know that exists and I'll get to that point. But when you start, lack of a better term, willy-nilly, and you don't ever bring the constructs of understanding where you and your customers can be happy, that's not a good plan, not a trajectory, good trajectory.
I almost wish, right? Like, I don't know, you know, I'm a big sports guy, but you know, like when somebody goes into the NFL for the first time, they put them through like a symposium where they bring ex players or existing players in to kind of like give them the rules of the road, explain to them what to do and not to do on social media, how to manage your money so that you don't go broke, you know, once you're out of the league, or, you know, like they go through like the pitfalls and the gotchas, right? So that these people aren't starting from absolute like zero. I almost feel like, you know, again, people who haven't put the structure around their business and maybe they've just been muscling through it, or net new people, like I wish they could work backwards from somebody that just sold their company, their IT services or managed services company, and to understand what things make you valuable and profitable versus not. Because when you understand those pieces, even though you're starting something or you're still early or you just haven't thought about this, you are making decisions in the blind that could literally net you nothing in return other than a few extra bucks in the bank account. And is it worth it, right? Like everybody's like, well, I'm exchanging time for money. But are you, right? You know, so at the end of the day, different things are valued different ways, right? Like block time and a reoccurring agreement aren't valued the same way. One-off break fix versus a, you know, ongoing relationship is not valued the same way. Products and services hold almost zero value other than you see some profit dollars in your mailbox. But as a company, they don't really care about those pieces when you go to talk about what's the value of your organization. So like when you start to like understand what these things actually do for you in the math column, you start making dramatically different decisions. And you can start planning differently, because then you're like, hey, no, I'm not going to do that side project. No, I'm not going to take on this person's, you know, home computer because they asked me nicely, or I'm not going to take a call that's, you know, an emergency, but not really an emergency. Like you start to actually define things differently, because at the end of the day, if you're not working towards something at the end, right? Like, and people are like, well, I'm just going to, you know, not starting something to sell it. At some point you might, or at some point you may decide to merge with someone, or at some point you may decide to borrow money. All of the things I'm talking about right now change what that means.
100%. You have to have your house in order. And I love the concept. You know, people started, I like the NFL's concept of let's talk, you know, from the very beginning. By the way, I met you last time right after NFL season had started. So this is the first time I've seen you without the Eagles bling, but it's still good. Still works for you. It still works. But I think that idea of, you know, the videos that are out that say my 20-year-old self, what I would tell my 20-year-old self, I almost feel like the industry could benefit from a, what I would tell a first-year MSP owner, you know, from those people who just sold, might be a future workshop for you or something of that sort, because it really is. It's all about, like, hindsight is 2020. It's easy to sit at the end and go, here's the rough things I learned. And I've been so blessed this year to have, you know, owners, because they can come alongside of me from a business standpoint. We're not doing the same thing, but they can definitely be like, here's where you need to make sure you do not. Here's where you need to make sure you do. And those have been so huge. And I think that comes, we talked a little bit with maturity, that comes with maturity, right? At my age, I can look at that and go, yes, let me just scoop up all that knowledge that you know and put it in my bank of, you know, I might not understand it yet, but I get it now. And the revelations you make, I think, in your first year of business, I feel like I've learned 10 years worth of information in the past, you know, 11 months or so. But I think that it does definitely come back to when you have wisdom imparted to you, are you ready for that wisdom? Because I do think there are some first year, second year, third year people who would be like, no, I'm for lack of better terms, I'm smarter than you are. So I'm not going to make those mistakes. And it's like, just always take from those people. You may not make the same mistakes, but take note of them, right? Take note of the path that got them to that mistake so that you can recognize it. You know, we don't understand a path if we haven't looked for the markers. If we listen to somebody's markers of this is the path I was on, this is the problems, this is how I got here, then we can start to say, oh, I have some of those same markers. But if you're not listening closely to the story and the markers, then what you hear is not going to be helpful to you because
no,
it's
that's fair.
Natural human tendency.
I've seen more and more, like the more mature MSPs have taken a concept that's been happening on the SaaS world, the software world for quite some time, right? Like they do plan some sort of, like beginning of year kickoff where they're bringing their people either like in some sort of retreat format or offsite or, even somewhere exotic maybe. I just heard somebody like took their team to like Jamaica for something. I was like, oh, that's cool. So you're going to do a in Jamaica? Cool. That's awesome. But like they actually are at the MSP IT service provider level, like saying, all right, let's get my key managers and stakeholders. Let's put them in a room. Let's set the agenda. Let's all agree on what's going on and figure out like what's not working well and start to shake through it, right? Which is great. Like I love that concept. I mean, we recently did something similar with sales and marketing here at my other company. And quite frankly, it just sets the agenda so that everybody understands the plan, right? Like get on the same page, get the story right, all rowing in the same direction. And then like, as the people who are like kind of evaluating everyone, you're also like, well, if that person's not bought in and that person's not bought in, are they here? Right? Like you're doing a couple things at once. I love that concept. And by the way, like people are doing it in January, right? Like the year had already started officially.
100%. There's so many sales kickoffs. I mean, when I was familiar with our sales kickoff, it happened in January. Obviously, all the planning, the thoughts, and that kind of thing. But it was to get the team ready, to get the marketing team, to get people aligned. And I actually have we're calling it kind of a mini kickoff with one of my customers planned, where we're just going to talk through. Because I think oftentimes when you are of that, smaller size, you're not headed to Jamaica, so that people understand that's not a requirement. sometimes we don't even write the goals down. Right? They're not even documented anywhere. And I want to say, if that's the goal, is it not worthy of at least even a like large post-it on the wall? Something that can be easily changed, temporary, understand that. But what is the thing that is the guiding principle to what your business is going to look like for the next year or two or three or four? I mean, that's where we talk about, I remember Bob Gardgard starting Autotask and talking about that transition to then having a board, right? And needing to do the board books and the things like that. And how sometimes that's a very different person that just evolves into that. So as an owner, you might be hitting that kind of scary part where you're like, oh, this is not my forte, right? But that doesn't mean you can't have a COO beside you who's like, this is my thing. Like, this is what I do. I did this for a company, four times your size. And this is... Those are the things I think sometimes people have to look at when they're serious about this. I think first is write down the goals. That sounds so stupid and so simple, but I'm amazed at the number of people, right? Myself, it's on a whiteboard beside me. That's it. So really did a kickoff with myself last week, and said, this is what we're going to try for. But I'm still refining that. I'm still one noting that and thinking about, okay, what are the things that are in my funnel? What opportunities like this one do I have to go talk to the channel and find out what's out there and find out what people are interested in? But if you don't even go so much as documenting them, writing them down, there's just not much hope for that goal. And people are like, oh, it's been working for me forever. There's a point where you outgrow that. There's a point where your team is not on the line with you, right? Worked for you forever with maybe five people because you're all sharing beers Friday night, that you're all, Sunday afternoon talking about what the week's going to. When you get to 10 to 15 to 20, you just don't have that synergy, and doesn't make it wrong. It just means you have to communicate more and you need to write down the goal. And I did a video, like it was probably this past fall, about the three mistakes people make in goals, in goal setting. And the number one I think people make is that they impose them instead of composing them, right? So they say, this is what it is, instead of going out to the orchestra of their people who all play a slightly different role and saying, this is what I'm thinking. What are your thoughts? What are our obstacles? What support systems do we need to put in place? I think that's the other thing. People, put a goal out there and it's like, did you look at what the obstacle might be? Did you look at what support system might need to go to place, get in place, or what might need to change to support that? So, I've had people say, oh, I do that, it fails. Okay. how did we do the goal setting? You know, did we impose it or did we compose it? Did we make sure we communicated and had people, you know, part of it? Because that's right about the time that you can't just keep it in your head is the same amount of time that you start to have people that you're a little bit bigger and you need to have these people make sure they know they're part of it and what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem when you break these artificial glass ceilings we're talking about here, right? Like your company gets to a certain point, you can't do the same things that you did before once you get past that.
Right.
It is back to the people word, right? Like, hey, I brought people into the organization. I'm not sure 100% trust them to do exactly what they're doing. And so like, there's a little bit of like micromanaging, right? And like, you know, because you don't know, right? You kind of took a shot on somebody, you know, and you're not really a hirer, right? You're a technology person. You don't know if that person is the right person. And then like, ultimately what happens is that, you know, if you, you know, you get to the point where if you let them go and supposed to take care of the things that you have assigned them, you know, it could go horribly wrong, right? And like, that's the fear, right? Of the whole people thing. You know, at the end of the day, there is something to be said. And I'm just a thousand people out there have said this, right? It's like, hey, you know, when you're cognizant of what you're good and bad at, you start to bring in people to like complement what's missing, right? And you know, I've run into several people who like they're the owner of the company, but they're not the actual executive person running the day-to-day operation after a certain point because they realize like it's not my jam, right? I'm not a good a manager of people. I'm not a good evaluator of people. I'm not a good hirer of people. And so like all of a sudden they realize that maybe they're good as a technical person, right? Or as a you know, somebody, you know, like, so instead of being the CEO, maybe you're the CTO, right? For lack of a better example. You know, when it comes to the people planning part, Melissa, I mean, and again, different size organizations, different maturity. If you're a big company, maybe you actually have an actual HR people type person who's just responsible for that. I would say most MSPs, you know, aren't large enough to have a dedicated position just for that. How do you work through that part of it, right? Because like, unfortunately, you know, you can read every resume on the planet. You don't know what you don't know till you're in it, it sounds, you know, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And I think people hiring that short little stint that I spent at a technology company was actually for a pre-employment assessment company who was filled with industrial organizational psychologists who did really cool stuff that if I had had a cool school counselor in my high school years, I might have actually looked into that career because it's a really cool, like business blended and human psyche. But that taught me, that time taught me that there is actually a process underneath this and that people are not as unpredictable as you expect. But I do think when you're hiring for key people, that if you can find like a good HR consultant, or maybe even just, I don't even know if it would need to be HR. That would kind of where I would tend to, but there might be another, you know, type of who can help you get to the core of what that person needs to be good at. So one of the clients I work with is wonderful to say, you know, I hired you because I'm not good at this XYZ, right? And so it's like, that's why you're supplementing my business. Get that. They actually did a hire. And they found someone who looked like they had had some good industry experience and they're but they didn't have the ability to absorb the way this company needed things to be done. And legitimately that they could justify that it should be done this way. Now, fast forward 6 months after that person, so that person leaves, I think 90 days in, and now they just hired an individual who came from a totally different space, from the healthcare space, right? But they have a desire to be in technology, they have skill sets. So it's the ability to pull off what we think are essential to what is really essential. So like if I'm gonna hire for a service desk coordinator, is it really essential that they understand ticketing systems and they understand how to, actually, no, not in my opinion. It's more essential that they understand how to triage a situation. They understand how to deal with difficult escalations. They understand how to translate what a technician might be saying into some sort of verbal communication that a customer can understand and appreciate. Like they're much more of a conduit than they are a systems person. And so I used to, when I hired at Autotask for my product support reps, if somebody had restaurant or banking experience, I was really keen on having them because anybody who's been waitstaff can deal with difficult, ugly. Like, you can deal with any conversation over the phone that you've had to deal with somebody practically, you know, waiting to throw a plate of food in your face, right? So if you have the barrier of the phone, you're great. You're like, I can handle any of these. And banking, you know, when we were dealing in Autotask, we were dealing with people's money. And I used to always say that to them. You know what? You might think that they just can't approve and post the way they want. That means they can't invoice, which means they can't pay their employees, which means their employees' dinner, as we talked about, is not on the table. Like, think about the impact of what you're doing. And so I think what I would say to MSPs who are trying to do that is I actually would try to invest. If you have a key position that you're looking to hire for, try to invest in getting some outside help. Looking for an HR consultant. I'm not that person, but you know, looking for somebody who can help. One thing I will say, chat, if we bring around the ChatGPT, job descriptioning, like punching in the title you think for the job you think you want to hire into ChatGPT is really eye-opening sometimes, because you put in this title and you're like, oh, so that's what the interwebs say. Well, that's not at all what I thought, right? So you tweak some words you get, because so often the descriptions we want to try to make them fit with our cool cultures, but they're not giving right off the bat. They're not giving the right, you know, impression. So, but I think working with that, or maybe even if that is not an option, getting with some of your bigger MSP friends, getting into communities like this one, and having that discussion of like, how did you find this person? What are the skills they have? Could I have a conversation with your person who's doing that job and knocking it out of the park? And just having the right questions to ask. You know, I'm a huge fan of the right questions to ask, and understanding how to interview too. I think a lot of MSPs, I think a lot of businesses.
That is a skill set that most people do not have. I'm going to be honest with you, right? They go online, they're like, questions to ask in an interview, right? And it's like, yeah, guys, we're already in a bad spot.
I always love the ones that are like, you know, so this position's really grueling and you're gonna have to work extra hours and, you know, you can be called out at any time and people are mean and angry. Are you okay with that? Who is gonna say, if you want the gig, who's gonna be like, no, that sucks and I'm never gonna wanna do that? I mean, there's so much. And I think that's the one thing I was happy about, that short little stint with the pre-employment, because I learned about situational questions and building behavioral questions and then building, listening for behavior and action and result in an interviewee's response. So getting solid data and being able to, like, you know, sift through the chaff of things down to, okay, who is that person really? But there's still so much bias that I'm a big fan of, yeah, trying to bring, if you can, if you don't have the money for that, at least do a little bit of your own research and get some solid interview questions. That is something I'm happy to help people with if they ever have, like, hey, this is what I ask. They want to send me it. I'll be like, yeah, don't ask that. Don't ask that. Don't. Now, I'm not legal. I will say that. So you should still always run your questions by HR legal. You know, have people ask, well, I ask them if they have a car. No, you can't ask that. You can ask if they have reliable transportation. That is all you can ask. You know, little things like that that people don't know. But I think that's worth it. Your people are so important that if you've never invested outside for anything, I think investing in someone to help you build that and maybe some questions to ask, or maybe go all out and help them to have them do the initial screening. Yeah. It's worth it. People are just, it's way too, as we've talked about, it's technology. No, it's people. And they're way too critical to your success to feel like, to blindly go through the process of trying to pick the right one.
The smaller company, right? One person can make a pretty big dent. Let's be honest, right? Good or bad. So one thing that, you know, completely other angle, our good friend Jen behind the scenes, right? Is like, maybe ask people to record a video when they, you know, submit their job application, right? Like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, now I see this person. I see their demeanor. I see how they talk. Like, that may just completely drive you down a road that you didn't even realize.
It's wonderful. Good, great point, Jen. And a lot of bigger companies do that. And even making sure you have the right questions, have them answer a couple questions, because you'll get people like diatribing over themselves with a whole bunch of stuff you don't need to know. Some of it incriminating. And so you can just toss them out as well. But answering just one or two questions, you know, that are pertinent to your culture as a company, if you happen to know that, or just good questions. Just always make them open-ended. You know, the ones I love are like, if you do have that, you know, tell me about a time when you had a difficult situation and how did you at work and how did you resolve it? That's a pretty simple question, but you want to be listening.
I flipped the table over and I knocked the water cooler on the way out the door.
But nobody died. That's exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so I love when like you get to a certain point, right? And like I'm not sure how many of these situations you've run into, but you know, like the compliance and all this other stuff that's getting forced downstream, right, to the service provider, right? Like, hey, whether you're working with a medical or financial or banking or government, and now all of a sudden you're being forced to go through these policy creations, operating procedure creation, like basically just to be able to collect the data and get it into a place where you can submit it to see if you can get there. You know, like think of like a SOC 2 or, like one of those type processes. I know CMMC is in the middle of changing for federal government people, but like that's going downstream to the vendors of the vendors of the vendors, right? Because they're all, it's like, fruit of the, the poisonous tree kind of thing. So like all of a sudden you're like, we never had a policy or procedure for this, or we never, we just do this. And they're like, well, did you write that anywhere? Like, did you create a plan? And people are like, no, I never created a plan because we never needed to show anybody a plan. And now all of a sudden you're in this paperwork hell, really, because like you're trying to create the policy and procedures that like a big company would when you're really a small company.
Yeah, it is difficult when stuff, I see that stuff flowing down, and it concerns me for service providers, right? Because it's so big and overwhelming. It's sort of like, but it goes back to our earlier discussion of you've got to know where you want to play and where you can be profitable, right? Because it's a point where you like may have to say, well, those guys have to go because we can't meet that compliance, or we can't, it's not profitable for us to try to do that. We're going to focus on these two compliance structures because we can't do the rest of that. But I am a huge fan of documentation. My clients will tell you I drive them crazy with it just because I think it's essential to, well, I was one of the people that I'm coaching is trying to delegate. And I said, okay, so how much of that procedure do you have documented? Of course, it's nothing. And I totally understand that, right? I fully would have been surprised if he's like, well, I have this document right here. I've been like, that's amazing. I expect zero, right? But I said, you cannot send something off to somebody without a general checklist that they should be able to do. And you should write it down how you think it's done. And they should go through it exactly how you say. And that's how you do, and that's it. You document it. There's a great product I keep hearing from people called Tango. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I guess there's even a free license that as long as you're using SaaS software and not anything, executable desktop, it can do it for you. And that's amazing. It doesn't have to be perfect, but now for some compliance, it does have to be perfect. But get started on it, right? Like if you have an industry that you are definitely keen on, you should make sure that you are setting up your world to follow their compliance, right? Or something you're looking forward to. I always say like, don't build your house for the one bedroom. Like build your footprint, buy your land so that you understand how you would go up or out or over or whatever it is. So think that bigger. Like, and it goes back to our whole conversation of you got to have a point out there that you're looking at, whether it's a merger or it's a being bought out, whatever it is. You got to have a point that you're focused on, and you should have that documentation set up. And I would see there's probably going to be, I know of a company I actually talked to a while ago that's helping a lot with compliance on things, not necessarily with MSPs, but and I think there's going to be even a broader space of that because it's so hard. And you
Yeah,
just can't be an expert of all those things.
I think part of the problem in this, on this topic is, hey, it's not who you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? So it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, this person introduced me to this person, I got this account, and then I got this other account, and then all of a sudden I got this potpourri of accounts. But like you did that because you were just looking for any revenue at all, right? Just get off the ground. And then you go down the line, you're trying to do, your part, right? You're keeping everybody, best practices, et cetera, right? You're trying to make sure they're doing the right things. Then all of a sudden, bam, you get the, hey, well, in order to continue working with you, you need to be able to do this, and this, or else, because our customer is demanding that we now follow this. And now all of a sudden you get blindsided, right? I think that's largely where a lot of this comes to the, hit the road, rubber hit meets the road kind of thing. Like they didn't plan to be in manufacturing, or they didn't plan to be in financial services, right? They like You know, they somebody recommended you. You got in, you cool, you worked it out, you started something, and then all of a sudden you realize, you know, that they're being forced from their bigger customer to do something, and now you're stuck.
Yes, absolutely. That goes back to, I got good advice this year, as I was blessed to be able to start my new gig without really needing financial support or anything. You know, it's one of those consultings, one of those things you usually can do that with. And so that writing of the business plan, I was like, eh. So, but I had a very good point that somebody said to me is get it down. Doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't just flush it out. Simple. You know, maybe you don't have to figure that finance part out, but flush it out and then reference it. Go back to it every 5 to 6 months. Revisit. And you know, when they told me that, I was like, oh, I'm not going to forget. It's amazing how much you forget. You know, I went back to that original business plan, which had way too many words, but there were some things in there that I'm like, you know, I got away from that. I was going to do that and I haven't done that. I did it for like 2 or 3 months and I haven't revisited it. I think that's the key thing that businesses have to do. And that original business plan might be way far in your distance. And if it is, then you need to think back again. What is my business plan for the next 10 years? And use that as your pattern. You know, I'm the granddaughter of a carpenter. So you cut from the original, right? You don't cut from the second or the third cut. You just keep coming back from the original. And when you have that sort of structure, and I'm not talking this has to be a 50-page document. I'm talking a 4-page document that hits on, you know, what market am I in? What products do I sell? Who do I sell to? How do I get out to them? Those basic parts of a business plan that you can then revisit when those things happen and say, and again, if you know if they're profitable or not, there's another, you know, check in their column. But profitability, does it align with where I want to be? Yes or no? And those can be simpler decisions than I think people want to make them out to be. They're hard sometimes because it's, you know, 10 grand monthly recurring revenue, but you're like, right, but in the end, we net like $700, right? And over here, we're making five, but we're netting 4,000, right? And it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that you just have to know those to be able to decide where it is. Cause it does creep up on you 100%, you know? And it's easy to happen in a one person shop, let alone when you have maybe 2 or 3 salespeople that are trying to make a quota and they're, you know, whatever, whomever, and just pulling it in and not understanding that the focus is actually going to make their life easier because your presence, your footprint in that market is going to be bigger and word of mouth is going to be bigger. But it's hard to say no when you're trying to just bring in revenue.
100%. Don't have ChatGPT write your business plan.
Right. Do not. Good point. Good point. ChatGPT for should not write your business plan, your wedding vows, all those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Not good. Which is funny, right? Cause I think last week Microsoft's like, hey, Copilot is that our version of of AI stuff, right? Oh, by the way, we used to have a 300 user minimum. Now you can have one user. And it's like, so what does this thing actually do? Like, what is it going to help me accomplish for $360 per year per user?
Right.
A bit underwhelming, I've heard, but I digress.
I did hear about that price and things. I thought, that's a lot for asking it to write a job description here and there. But yes.
Yeah, like it's very interesting, right? Like it's been, you know, if you think about it, right? We've been, you know, from a technology standpoint, if you go back to like, you know, let's call it 2000 until now, you just have some major technology changes that have happened in a short window.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's actually a cool time to be alive, right? And on the planet to see all this stuff kind of come through. I was actually reading an article that Elon Musk said by 2050, so that's, you know, like, let's call it 25 years from now, there'll be 1 million robotic, you know, like you ever see the movie iRobot with Will Smith? Like that.
Yes.
Wow, 1 million, right? And you're like, that doesn't seem like a lot when there's 8 billion people on the planet. But that, like, you like when the stuff in the movies comes to life, I'm still waiting for warp speed and transporters, right? Like, I'm thinking that's coming next.
Yes, I'm still waiting for that DeLorean, right? That's
time machine park could be. Yeah. I mean, listen, you can fly really fast and come back and time would have changed, right? But like, you can go forward in time, the back in time, I'm not so sure.
Not quite there, but I think you're right. Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, my daughter always likens the fact that she was born when the iPhone was, so she doesn't really remember, like, when we talk about, when I used to check my email from the bank of computers on my college campus. Many Jen and I were talking about the, she remembers early internet sort of things and having to get off the phone to get dial up, and I told her she didn't sound old
You've
enough to do
got
that.
mail.
I said, I remember when you had to get off the phone because there was no call waiting. And someone's like, they could be trying to reach us and we can't get through. So I think it's just understanding though, but I think it does really require each of us when all of these things are changing, when even more things are imposed on us by what the world believes we, must have and do. I think it's even more important to be very clear on your core as a human and as a business to say, this is what we do, this is what we don't do, this is why we are successful. And absolutely, I think you have to explore those new things. I'm not going to sit and say, forget, Copilot, forget it. No, you have to. But the question is, how much energy do you allot to that? If you are a, front runner in everything, and that's why your customers love you, that is your success factor that makes you beat out everyone else, then yeah, you got to be on that stuff. You got to be ahead of that stuff. But if that's not who you are, then you've got to take the same approach. I mean, people do business with people because they trust them, because they like the way they approach things. So I think it's important not to just having worked for a vendor that obviously always kind of like, hey, this can give you a better margin. I get that. I get that's their business too. But you've got to know what needs you have. And then you go looking. And I'm sure the market, the moment you say you have a need, every algorithm in the world will bring you every product that could ever be on that need. But you define that first. You don't let the environment define your needs. You look as the business owner with the help of your team. I think a lot of owners too don't think about pulling their people in. I love the owners that I work with because they really do pull their teams in. And I don't think I could work with people if I'd start working with them and they're not doing that, they're going to be doing that at the end because you hired those people with trust and belief in what they could bring to the situation and what they could help. And if you don't let them start, as I've been saying today, acting up, thinking up a little higher than they currently are, you're not going to have them for very long. And you're going to benefit from letting them explore, and be a bigger part of the business, especially for those 20, 30, 40 organizations. You got to do that.
100%. Well, it's been, every time we talk, right, we go into a lot of different areas. But I mean, here's the problem. These are the things that technology businesses, especially in the IT services arena, they kind of, it's not top of mind, right? They're like, they get forced into it once they hit a certain reality. And then, they need people to come in and help them, like, hit the red button and crash course through it. So, like, start somewhere. I think that's the thing I took away from today, right? Don't, you know, not, you don't have to be a MBA, all right? Melissa's good at that. But like, you want to start, write a business plan. Doesn't have to be perfect. Start somewhere. Write a policy. Doesn't have to be perfect. Start somewhere. Write, the goals, right? Doesn't have to be perfect. Start somewhere, right? Like, the only way to grow is you got to start here and then, like, evaluate as you're going and decide whether you're pivoting or you're building, right? So, unfortunately, a lot of the times when you're small, you don't have like the bandwidth, I guess, to do all of this. But if you can't take anything else other way than what I just said, it's, hey, you don't know what business is good business unless you understand how the business is actually valuated. And if you understand that, coupled with profitability, then everything is a lot clearer on what's good and what's not. Back to the whole gig economy mentality, hey, I would rather you take the right customers and do a couple of other things to generate revenue now so that when your thing grows, you're really solid rather than taking anything from anybody only to find out that really holds zero value and down the line. It just really hurts.
Right. And you've put all that energy into it 100%. And start somewhere and don't worry about it not being January. Start whenever time of year, give it a rolling 12 months, but start somewhere and ask for help. If there are things that people need assistance on, reach out, look into your network to find it out because you're right. And always, I'm a big fan, always keep version one, version one. Do that brain dump. That's your start somewhere. Don't ever touch it again. V2 comes the moment you have a better idea, the moment you have, because then you never, if you start messing with version one, the original brain dump, you never see how far you've come. And that's such a huge momentum builder for us. So brain dump, start somewhere, keep it simple. V2, the moment you have a better idea, bring it in. And then you can see how much this iterative process is really powerful and what you're learning about yourself and your company through it.
I love that. Great tip. Melissa, how do people find out more about you and your company and what you guys offer? Where do they go?
Yeah. So a website is FTFTAC. That's just First Things First Training and Consulting.com. Every single first letter in there, or they can just find me on LinkedIn. That's actually where I post most of my things. My weekly videos are on there. And they can always reach out to me. I answer most reasonable private messages. If you look to link or connect with me, please just put a little message. Hey, I saw you and George talking in January, whatever. That makes me so much more inclined to be like, let's talk, but happy to talk with people just to figure out, give you some insight and just kind of follow up on what you might be able to do to improve your business. So
that's awesome. Melissa, I'm sure we're going to be talking a little bit further down the line. I always like, seeing how we progress through this thought, but I'm always keen to figure out like what you've done in between these calls too, right? Because it gives us a better idea of how people ebb and flow. But I digress. For everyone that's going to be watching this, this session obviously was recorded, so you know where to go or else you wouldn't have gotten there. But for everybody else, MSPinitiative.com under sessions, that's where we put all of these in audio and video format. Make sure to check out Melissa if you need some help. Sounds like she's willing to just even chat with you. That's cool. I love people who are like, willing to give up some time. Nobody's asking you to put any dollars down if you just start a conversation. And then, hey, we keep on doing these sessions. We have these planned out pretty much going. I think we're already midway through the year somewhere. And then, of course, we're going to be, bringing some of these in-person events. Thank God. love the virtual, but love in-person more, right? So, we're going to be bringing these in-person events to you later on this year. So we'd love to see you guys in person. Melissa, thank you very much for jumping on. Catch you on the next one.
Yes, thank you. Take care.